Welcome back to Ram Nation Radio on Mile High Sports, AM 1550, KDCO, FM 94.1 and FM 96.9 Boulder. This is Mile High Sports Radio. Mark Knutson here with your host, Joel Cantalamessa. Long time, you're getting old, man. Long time host of RamNation.com. And one of the things you'll find on RamNation.com is access to articles written by the fine writer, columnist, beat writer, do everything guy from Fort Collins, Colorado, and Mr. Kelly Lyle. Kelly's in Reno, Nevada, getting ready for tomorrow night's game. The Rams and Nevada in a game with serious Mountain West title implications. Did you think you'd be saying that at the beginning of the season, Kelly?
Not really. It's been a little bit different than I thought. I certainly wouldn't have thought this a year ago. The beginning of this season, maybe you started seeing that this was a pretty key stretch for the Rams. If they did what you thought they might be able to do in the non-conference season, and they did that. So Now they've got a real crucial stretch coming up with Nevada, Utah State, Wyoming for the next three.
Kelly, this is Joel, and you know, looking back 2 weeks ago when CSU went across the country and pulled one of the biggest wins in recent history, last week against Tulsa was probably, in past history, a chance where CSU would probably have had a letdown. Maybe, you know, possibly pulled out the game, but looked ugly doing it. Instead, they put together their best game probably of the year. They came out of the gates hot. They dictated the flow of the game, and they kept their foot on the pedal the whole time. Now you got to go across the country again the other way and play basically one of the top three teams in the conference. How do you see, I mean, what's the buzz around the team right now? What was the buzz all week, and how do you see this game playing out?
You know, I think it's going to come down to, I think this game's going to come down to a key stop somewhere, whether it be a turnover or what, by two defenses that really have kind of struggled. I think both these teams are going to be able to put up a lot of points on the other, and somewhere along the way it's going to be somebody's going to get an interception or force a fumble or make a key fourth down stop, whatever, goal line stand, whatever it might take. But, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a really good competitive game, which is interesting given that last time I was here, I think I saw one of CSU's worst games ever when they lost 51-6 to Colin Kaepernick and the Wolfpack in 2010.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned, you're right, a defensive play by two defenses that figure to just be spending a lot of time on the field could probably be key. The punters aren't going to see a whole lot of action, but can you see a player on either team's defense, be it a Bernard Blake or a Kevin Pierre-Lewis or someone like that, that has to come up with something spectacular in this situation?
You know, I think it you mentioned two guys there, right? I think it is. I think it's probably going to be an interception. I think that's what, if Colorado State wins it, that's probably what could be the turning point, because this is a, you know, a defense that they've gotten a couple of those. Certainly Bernard Blake had a huge pick that, you know, turned the tide at Boston College and allowed them to win that game. Then they did some other things after that defensively to secure that victory, but Bernard's interception kind of turned the game around a little bit. And then last week, you know, obviously it was a pretty dominating win over Tulsa, but nevertheless, you had Trent Matthews with an interception in the end zone. There's just been a lot of different things like that, and those are both guys that I think are, you know, capable of making that kind of play. And Cody Fajardo, certainly interceptions have been an issue for him. He threw four of them last week in a loss to Boise.
We're here with Kelly Lyle of the Fort Collins, Coloradoan. Kelly, again, thanks for joining us. You are out in a place where placing public wagers is legal. I thought when the line came out for this game, it was very interesting, to be honest with you. CSU opened as a 1-point favorite. It's now, you know, 2.5 up to 3 possibly in some areas with some books. Why do you see CSU as a favorite here? When you look at the stat comparison, they're very favorable. They're pretty even in both areas, you know, on offense and defense. And when you look at them closely, I mean, Nevada actually leads in many of the major categories. CSU's got to go play on the road here. Why do you see in the eyes of the bookmakers that CSU should be favored in this game?
I think it's just because that Nevada pass defense is one of the absolute worst in the country. They rank, you know, 120th out of 128 teams, and Colorado State has a very good, strong passing attack. And I think that's one of those key numbers that people look at, because even when a team's in trouble, what are they going to do? They're going to throw the ball. And so even if the Rams find themselves behind, what they're going to be turning to is what really should be a strength for them. So I would suspect that's kind of how you get to that. You know, Colorado State's weakness has been its run defense, but Nevada hasn't shown that it's got an unusually impressive running game. In fact, these two teams both average the exact same yards on the ground per game. They're tied for 49th in the country statistically at 182.8 yards a game. So I think that's probably where that came from, is just that even if Colorado State does find itself behind, they get to play their strength against Nevada's biggest weakness to try to get back in it. And that's if I were somebody who did gamble on games, that's probably something I would take pretty seriously.
Hey, Kelly, in basketball, you hear a lot of talk about who controls the tempo, whose game, is it going to be a slowdown game? But that's become the way of football in the last 5 or 6 years. Is Colorado State going to try to play this game at Nevada's tempo? Nevada just wants to run as many plays as possible, run up to the line and throw it. Could you see a scenario where CSU says, listen, we need to give our defense a little bit of a break here. We are going to run the ball because we do have DeHart and Gerrals and Ogden. We can run the ball a little bit. Are we going to... Do you see CSU trying to establish some ball control here to maybe keep their defense off the field a little bit?
You know, I think so, and that's something Jim McElwain talks about every week, and he certainly talked about it a lot this week, is the idea that, you know, you're not necessarily going to try to punch the ball in as quickly as you can every single time you get it, that there may be some play calls and all sort of designed to sustain a drive for 4 or 5 minutes and give that, not only give your defense a rest, but keep Cody Fajardo and that Nevada offense off the field. So I don't know that we'll see maybe quite as many of those attempts to strike quickly as we saw against Tulsa, just for that reason. I think they may be more comfortable with, I think they'd rather have a, 10, 12 play scoring drive than a 2 or 3 play scoring drive. And that's why it's awkward. What do? You're not going to tell the guy not to go to the end zone, but you're not going to maybe throw that post pattern. You're going to be throwing quick outs or doing a lot more runs up the middle type things like that. And with DeHart, and even Jason Oden, you know, whether Treyus Gerrals plays or not, they've got DeHart and Jason Oden have both shown that, they can handle that kind of game and get those. You know, they're both averaging well over 6 yards a carry.
Kelly, coming off of a tough loss to Boise State, you know, it was a very high-scoring game, almost 100 points put up by both of those teams last week. It was, a large crowd. I think they said third or fourth largest crowd in school history. What kind of an impact do you think losing a game like that has on a team? Or do you think that that's quickly pushed, in hindsight and it'll be an even game straight up against CSU?
You know, I actually think that probably makes Nevada hungrier for this game and a lot less likely to maybe not be on top of their game. They now know that they kind of have to win out in conference if they still want to win that West Division title. It's still very much within their reach because their loss was outside the division.
Right.
So they could still run the table in the West Division and get to that Mountain West Championship game. So I think that if anything, we're going to see a much more determined and focused Nevada team than maybe we would have seen had they been able to win that game over Boise State.
We're talking with Kelly Lyle from Fort Collins, Colorado, and joining us here on Ram Nation Radio. Kelly, we know players and coaches aren't supposed to look ahead. We can do that in the media. We can look at next week's game with Utah State and say, these two games, as Matt Stevens wrote in your paper this week, these two games are very critical for a chance for Colorado State to talk about getting into at least the Mountain West title game, if not win the Mountain West Conference. Let's just go play devil's advocate and say they do win these next couple games. With everything that's going on off the field with the stadium situation, how important is the immediate success of this team to the stadium situation as you've been following it so closely?
You know, I don't think it's all that important to it. I really don't. I think the reasons that are being made for the stadium go so much beyond what this football team does. I think that's more an ancillary effect that, yes, if the football team does well, maybe it helps you raise it, Maybe it's a little bit easier to make that pitch to somebody that you hope will donate to your stadium. Maybe you get a little bit more momentum from some of the people that really haven't taken a side yet on the issue about why they could see the need for a new stadium. They're not pushing for a new stadium to really get more seats or to hand because they're selling the place out. There's so many other factors involved in it that I really don't see the success or lack of success of the football team this year, next year, having a huge impact. Certainly, it's got some impact, but I think it's a, I think it's pretty far down the scale as far as factors that are going to weigh into this decision.
And so we had a big breakthrough here with news in the past couple of weeks as far as what the intentions are, what Dr. Frank is thinking about in terms of moving forward with this, and those four options that he gave. Does it seem to you like he's got one in mind that he thinks is the best option? To me, reading between the lines and through various sources and different media outlets and whatnot and conversations, it seems like number four, with having that public-private partnership, is something that they're really looking forward as possibly the best option on making sure that this thing gets done. Do you get that sense, and can you shed any light on how something like that would work? I mean, have you had any discussions on how a public-private partnership would work for CSU?
You know, I think certainly the options that Tony Frank, and he made no secret of it, nor did the Board of Governors when they were discussing it and gave them the unanimous approval to explore the four options. Options three and four are clearly what they're favoring. They want an on-campus stadium. Whether or not they can find a private partner to make up what they were unable to get in private fundraising to cover the difference, that's really what the big issue is, and that they're out actively seeking that. I think if they were to do that, though, it would be a matter of probably having to, they'd have to have more incentive than just you get to own and operate the stadium, because if the university itself is struggling as to whether or not these revenue projections are going to be profitable, then there's no way a private entity is going to come in and say, I can get rich by building them the stadium and leasing it back. So it's going to have to be somebody that's doing it kind of out of the either their own generosity, or the university is going to have to give them something to really sweeten the pot, maybe some of that real estate they've been buying up just south of the stadium that can be developed or something along those lines. And I'm sure they're exploring that. That's what they're looking at. That's, of all the options out there, the one we've gotten the least information on. And I think it's because there are so many different ways you could structure an agreement like that. So that's probably the wild card in the whole bunch. I think if they could find somebody to do that, they would probably do it and jump at it, because then you can build the whole stadium up front, have the whole thing in its entirety, as opposed to be trying to build it in phases where you're going to take off and not put that second deck on the east side,
yeah,
and you're
going
to try
awful.
To squeeze your 36,000 seats into less space. I'm not even sure. I've been asking the university, and they've declined so far to give me a little bit more detail on how they're going to keep the capacity the same while removing an entire deck of seating. I'm not quite sure how that part of it works without substantial redesign of the entire project, and they're suggesting that they still plan to stick to basically those plans that Populous put together and that Icon's been working with them on.
Yeah, it'd be pretty awful to try to do a cheap version right now. I mean, that really isn't solving anything. You need something that you can recruit to. We know McElwain's been recruiting to it. We know he was recruited here to because there was going to be a new stadium. So they really do. Really are in a corner here. They have to stick to what they originally planned to do.
Well, it's hard to say. They're not in a corner the way CU was, where they built it into the coach's contract that you better make improvements or else. They didn't make any promises like that, and they did get Jim McElwain to agree to an extension for, that's got a $7.5 million a year buyout, and there's no mention of the stadium in that contract. It doesn't matter if a stadium happens or doesn't happen. It doesn't matter if they say we're just going to make the most simple basic repairs to Hughes Stadium and play there for the foreseeable future. Jim McElwain's still committed to being their coach. So I'm not sure, certainly bringing him in, trying to build some success in the program, would you think give you the kind of momentum to move forward? But again, I don't think that's still what Tony Frank's number one objective is. I think that's one of those things that, sure, he'd like the momentum and like the energy that would bring, and maybe that makes it a little easier to find that private partner that's willing to kick in some money. Maybe it makes it a little easier to do some other things, but I don't think that's the I don't think that's going to be the key factor one way or the other. And frankly, with that $7.5 million buyout, I don't think that's going to make or break whether Jim McElwain stays at CSU or not.
Hey, Kelly, we got to run, but we appreciate it. Enjoy the game tomorrow night. We'll talk to you again down the road.
All right. Thanks,
Kelly.
Kelly Lyle, Fort Collins, Colorado. Before we go to break, we'd like to thank a couple more sponsors, Cindy Showerman of Beamer Insurance and Ellison Penn O'Connor Tax Consultants. Thanks for supporting Ram Nation Radio. We'll be back with Kyle Bell right after this on Mile High Sports Radio.